fresh, well, really not so fresh, from NYC. This is the Weekly Roundup for Sunday, March 19th, 2006. The Weekly Roundup is, as always, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro. A reminder here before we get underway, we're running that survey on podcast listening habits. The bad news is it'll occupy a few precious moments of your time to fill it out. But the good news is that we're having a drawing and giving away an iPod Nano to a lucky respondent. So head over to the show notes and check it out. You get a shot at a Nano, and it helps us pay the bills at this end. So everybody wins. And thanks, of course, to those who have already filled it out. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast and to get the link to the listener survey, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. So did my vacation put me out of touch with the news so that the show's context will be thin and useless? Or did it give me a unique breadth of perspective and time to reflect on the subtle implications of the week's events? Well, my friends, there's only one way to find out. We're looking at two stories this week, dual-booting Intel-based Macs and AOL's upcoming video service. Colin Nenderkern's contest to create a dual-booting Intel Mac that runs both macOS 10 and Windows XP is officially over, and a winner has been announced. According to Mr. Nenderkern's website, the winner, known as NARF, will get the $14,000 U.S. prize. Part of the requirements for the contest winner included posting the steps to set up a dual-booting Mac. The technique has been peer-reviewed and has been confirmed valid. Prior to the winner announcement, many people felt it wouldn't be possible to set up an Intel-based Mac to boot Windows XP because the Mac does not include BIOS, which is a low-level hardware component that Windows relies on during the startup process. We have a link to a video showing an Intel-based iMac booting Windows XP in the show notes at macobserver.com/roundup. And the other story in the spotlight this week, AOL plans to officially launch its own internet-based video service called In2TV. I hate it when people do that to product names. The video service called In2TV. That was on Wednesday. The streaming videos will be free, but will include commercials. Warner Brothers is providing programming from its library, including Welcome Back Kotter, Kung Fu, and Growing Pains. Now that's what I call premium content. Currently, four advertisers are lined up: Intel Corp, Kia Motors, Kraft Foods, and the Hershey Company. AOL is planning on adding a pay-per-download service similar to Apple's iTunes Music Store in the coming months. Video downloads are expected to cost $2 US, just like iTunes, and will require a special application to play, also like iTunes. AOL is also negotiating with other program license holders, including those beyond its parent company, Time Warner. So let's fire up the context machine. By the way, I haven't got any company in the context machine this week, given my traveling schedule. I'll tell you, it's pretty lonely in here all by myself. But hey, let me know what you think about this version of things. I don't know if we're going to keep it this way, if we're going to switch it back. We'll probably mostly do the interviews, but I'm curious what you think, what you prefer, if you really like this one or really hate it or really like the other one, whatever. Let me know. The email address is roundup@macobserver.com. Okay, so this dual booting story, the obvious question here is, who cares? Who really wants to dual boot a Mac, right? Who has some motivation to do that? Well, the first person that I see, the first group of people, would be the developers, people who are writing software for both the Mac and the PC. There's not a great deal of simultaneous software development that goes on for both platforms, but one might imagine in the places where that does happen that there would be people really interested in being able to buy one machine and boot both Windows and the Mac OS on it. The more interesting group of people here are enterprise customers, that is, large companies, big businesses, who have some interest in buying a single computer and being able to run two different operating systems on it. There are certain groups within large companies that might have an interest in working on Macs. For example, the in-house advertising or marketing people inside of a larger corporation who might prefer to work on a Mac, but the IT department is geared toward Windows. And one might imagine if the process is really easy, and that's, by the way, a big if the process is really easy to load Windows XP onto an Intel Mac, to get it to run stably and reliably, if that process were really easy, then one can imagine that when a group within a large company came up and said, hey, we'd really like to have Macs in our department, that the IT department might say, well, hey, since we can do this dual booting thing, if they do some cost analysis and they say, well, it looks like the Macs cost about the same amount as the computers we would have bought you otherwise, then they might say, well, hey, let's just go ahead and get some Macs. We'll let you dual boot them. We'll only support the Windows stuff. The IT department will only support the Windows stuff, but you guys can run the Mac OS on it and do all the Mac OS stuff you want to. And of course, if you look at the numbers out there, the estimates on the amount of maintenance needed to run Mac OS computers, Mac OS systems, they tend to require a lot less maintenance than Windows machines. And so the departments might likely be willing to say, hey, we'll take care of our own Mac support as long as we can, you know, we have this opportunity, and the company's still willing to buy them, these computers, because they'll run Windows XP. So in that sense, it's a very interesting idea. And the reason that this story came up for the Context Machine, the reason that I decided to run this story this week, I don't think that this story has a really big impact in terms of dollars. This is not going to make any particular group of people really rich. There's no reason to believe at the moment that Apple's going to sell tons more computers than they could have otherwise. There's no reason to believe that this is going to somehow cause Microsoft to sell large numbers of copies of Windows, because of course, in order to dual boot a Mac, you're going to need to buy Windows XP in order to run it on that Mac. So, it might increase some sales for Apple. It might increase some sales for Microsoft. But in the short term, at least, it doesn't look like this is going to cause anything groundbreaking in terms of dollars and cents for groups that are currently out there. But it does seem very interesting in the sense that it looks like it has the capacity to change the way at least some people work, in terms of making things much more convenient, being able to buy a single computer and run two operating systems, or even three. In a previous show, Jeff Gamet was here and talked about how some people might want to run Linux as well. That's already possible to dual boot a Mac with the Mac OS and Linux. And what Jeff said, and I think he's absolutely right, is that the Mac can become a kind of Swiss Army knife of operating systems, where it could run the Mac OS, or it could run Linux, or it could run Windows XP. And that's a really interesting idea from a user's perspective, from a just in terms of allowing people to do things they couldn't do before. Buy a single computer, run all your operating systems on it. The critical question here, really, I believe, is how easy this is going to be to do. We don't have a really solid answer to that question, and in fact, one of the reasons that I don't have a guest with me this week in the Context Machine is that we've got a couple of people, Jeff Gamet and John Braun, on the staff who are out there looking a little bit closer at this stuff to see what some of the operational details are in terms of making this work. And we're going to try and peer review that or get in touch with people who are peer reviewing it and take a look at some of those details. And then sometime in a future show, we'll talk about exactly how easy this is and how much easier it might become if it's difficult. I can tell you this much. I looked at the directions for how to do it, and it's not something that I would want to do flying solo. So this is not a trivial thing to do, to dual boot a Mac with Windows. So now let's move on to this AOL story. We'll set aside the dual booting story for a little while. We'll come back to it once we have a little more information on the ease with which we can do this or not. Let's move on and talk about this AOL story. The real question here, of course, is can AOL go up against the big gorilla in this particular space, which is the only real gorilla in this space at the moment, iTunes, the iTunes Music Store, which sells videos for $2 a pop. Now, the first issue here, when you just look at the details of this story, again, that I see, the thing that pops out at me, AOL is beginning by launching a streaming video service. Now, that's not intrinsically bad or a bad idea, but it doesn't make it a viable competitor to any of the digital marketplaces like iTunes that we've seen so far, simply because it's not a portable solution. You can't stream this stuff to a music player or to a phone. If you compare it to Apple's iTunes, you can buy a video at iTunes, download it to your iPod, take it with you anywhere you want to. Or if you compare it to some of the cell phone network solutions where you have, for example, Verizon's VCast, where you can get streaming video or music on your phone. This is not a portable solution. You have to be sitting in front of your computer to do it. So that's a very different world and a very different market than the one that iTunes and the cell networks and other people are courting right now. So the streaming service itself isn't exactly novel, and it really isn't competing in the same space as something like iTunes. The other service, the idea of downloading, this is in a sense a much simpler analysis, and we've talked about this on the show in the past. The real issue here is that AOL will provide a player, presumably. We know that you're going to have to use some specific application in order to play the videos that you download. But then the question is, what do you do with them next? And as Brian has said, Brian Chaffin, the editor of the Mac Observer, and some other people like Jeff Gamet on this show have also said, and many other people have written in many different places, the really critical thing about the iPod and iTunes is their integration. The fact that it's so easy to move content onto an iPod and then take it with you. And no one else has quite replicated that. And that is AOL's challenge. And here, AOL is just providing content. All they're doing is they're providing videos that you can buy, and they're providing, presumably, the application where you can view them. And until there's a player that they know works seamlessly with the content that you can download from that service, it's hard to imagine that they're going to gain a lot of traction. So we're up against that age-old problem, or at least the whatever it is, three-year-old problem that iTunes created for all the other competitors in this marketplace, which is in order to really compete with iPod and iTunes, you need to have an end-to-end solution, or perhaps someone, some collection of companies might be able to do something collaborative, but we haven't seen that yet. And again, we've talked about that in previous shows. For example, the complaints that Napster has had about Microsoft's execution in creating a music platform to compete with Apple's. So that's it for the Context Machine. It's a little shorter than usual. Again, I didn't really have much company here or anyone to argue with really intensely. But hey, if you've got, as usual, questions or comments about the news, you can send them to me at roundup@macobserver.com. And let's do a slightly modified product roundup. Since we've got some extra time this week, I figured we would take a minute to take a look at one product really closely. And this week, it's a service called AmigoFish, and it's at AmigoFish.com. One of the reasons that I wanted to talk about this, it's a really interesting idea, this thing, AmigoFish. It's a site, or it's a service, designed to help people find podcasts that would interest them. Now, that's not a new idea. There are a lot of sites out there for rating podcasts and talking about podcasts. Podcast Alley, for example, where you can vote for shows. Hey, and you can vote for this show if you like at Podcast Alley. The link to that is in the show notes. That was a shameless plug. Or Podcast Pickle, where you can add shows as favorites. Hey, you can do that with this show too. Or iTunes, where you can review shows. Hey, You can even do that with this show at iTunes as well. But that's not the point. The point is there are all those services out there where you can do that stuff, and I really love to see it when you guys go out there and do it, so thanks to all of you who have done that. But the point here is there's this other thing called AmigoFish, and it's written by, or it's maintained by, a fine gentleman named Dave Slusher, who is the host of Evil Genius Chronicles, which is a Backbeat Media podcast network show, and he does a great job. But he also runs this terrific site, AmigoFish, AmigoFish.com. And the idea here is you rate shows. You rate them with stars, 1 to 5. But instead of rating them for other people to see, like, for example, if you go to something like iTunes and you rate the show, you put in a star thing, and the rating of the show is an average of all the star ratings that people have given it. That's not what happens at AmigoFish. At AmigoFish, when you rate shows, you rate all the shows you know about, and then what happens is you're showed, the service, AmigoFish, shows you other shows and predicts what you're going to think of those shows. It's a really interesting idea. And in a sense, it's really much more useful than any of the other services out there. If you want to kind of see what people are talking about in the podcaster community, Podcast Alley and Podcasting News and Podcast Pickle, they're all great places to go to see what people are saying. But if you want to find shows, the idea behind AmigoFish is actually really much more powerful, a site that tells you, predicts for you, what you might like. Now, I spent a while a few weeks ago over there rating shows and looking for new shows, and it's interesting because some of the shows it spits out at you are the really well-known shows, and then every now and then you get these random things. And I did manage to find a few shows that I had never known about and that I really like. The biggest thing about AmigoFish, though, and the reason that I'm spending so much time on it on this show, is that what it really needs in order to succeed is a bigger audience, because of course it's based around matching up similar interests among listeners. So if a bunch of listeners of this show all really like another show and they all rate the two shows similarly, then if some new guy comes along and says, hey, I listen to the Weekly Roundup and I like that show, then another show that all of you fine people who listen to this show will pop up and they'll say, hey, I'll probably like that as well. But in order for that to work, you need a big audience. And AmigoFish is still growing, so it really needs people to go over there. And one of the other reasons I feel totally comfortable doing this is because AmigoFish is not a commercial endeavor at all. If you go over there, it's clear that it's a community-based thing. And so I feel very comfortable that no one's going to say, you're fighting for these people and you shouldn't be. It's all about the money for you, isn't it? No, it's not. They're a really... it's a really interesting service, and if you listen to podcasts, which if you're listening to this, then I guess you do, then you should run over there and take a look at it, because it will be really helpful to you if you're looking for shows that you think might interest you. And of course, it'd be really helpful to everyone else, including me and anyone else that listens to podcasts and wants to learn about other podcasts that they might like. It becomes really helpful to anyone who really wants to discover shows. So it's a good thing, I would think, if the podcast listening community would spend some time going over there and, you know, talking about the or rating the shows that they know about, because this is something that for people that like listening to podcasts, this is going to be something that we really want to have around, a way to find shows that we would like. And I think that Dave has a great idea over there. So go over and check that out. Again, we'll have a link in the show notes at Roundup or MacObserver.com/Roundup. And of course, it's AmigoFish, spelled A-M-I-G-O, Fish, F-I-S-H.com. And of course, let me know what you think about AmigoFish after you visit. You can send me comments, roundup@macobserver.com, and I'd be very curious to know what you think. And now for the more traditional product news, CSI announced the immediate availability of Concepts Unlimited 3 on Thursday. Concepts Unlimited is a 2D and 3D computer-aided design, or CAD, application that can work with documents for several other CAD applications. The new version includes an updated interface, improved modeling tools, enhanced rendering tools, and an expanded parts library. It also adds support for several CAD file formats. Additional information and pricing is available from the CSI website, which you can find along with all the info on these other products at macobserver.com/roundup. Swoop Software announced the immediate availability of Kitty Spangle's Solitaire 2 on Wednesday. It's a $20 download. The new version is free for currently registered users. Surf Noise on Wednesday launched Pocket Spots, a service that enables podcasters to place mini audio commercials in their productions. Pocket Spots focuses on short 4, 6, or 10-second spots. That sounds like a great idea to me, just because traditional 30-second spots aren't going to work so good in a medium where you can fast-forward through the ads. Pricing ranges from $100 to $900, depending on whether or not the customer supplies ad copy and whether or not it wants to use licensed music or employ stock audio. Sub Rosa Software announced a public beta of its new forensics and analysis package called Mac Forensics Lab on Wednesday. The application can analyze and recover data from Mac, Windows, and Linux storage devices, which, hey, maybe one day we'll all be on the same computer. Who knows? Final pricing is expected to be $995 US or $1,135 for a complete hardware and software package. In conjunction with the release of Mac Forensics Lab, Sub Rosa Soft also announced an online discussion board for people interested in Mac-based forensic research. Summit Soft Corp. has introduced Wedding Planner, which the company will ship by the end of March. The software includes a budget assistant, features for collaborative planning, and customizable timelines depending on religious faith, honeymoon detail management, and more. Pricing will be $40. Ionico has released Screen Protractor and Screen Compass, which join Screen Calipers to complete the company's screen measurement pack. Who thinks up stuff like this? The utilities float above other applications and can be used for web page layout, graphic design, CAD work, and for other stuff as well. They can make measurements in pixels, inches, centimeters, points, picas, and twips. And someone should email me and tell me what a twip is. Pricing is $30 US for each application. Coingo Software on Tuesday released Track Developer, a utility that eliminates history files for more than 50 applications and securely empties the system trash. Track Destroyer is $20 US. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to the Weekly Roundup. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly, and the bass is by Boom for TMO. Remember to fill out that listener survey. Check out Amigo Fish. Eat your vegetables. Stay subscribed. Until next week, we'll see you online.